But again, do not step over anybody. I'm going to have to put you in your own corner. Agreed?
Absolutely, George. And I've got the atomic clock here, and I'm actually marking down. I actually had the minority of the time, and so that's why I was trying to jump in there.
Well, we've got three more hours. I'm sure you'd make up for the difference.
You're a sweetheart, and I've just been chomping at the bit. I'll first say this. I didn't make any personal attacks. I didn't draw first blood, and I'm not going there. I will not be diverted, just like you won't, from the truth and this important discussion. You're being very fair. Let me just say this. I didn't talk about conspiracy theories. I talked about PNAC, Dick Cheney specifically saying we need a Pearl Harbor event to galvanize the people. I talked about Operation Northwoods. I went to New York in my film, and I interviewed the people on the ground, then I showed the documents. So a criticism that I'm in my film, I mean, that's crazy. So this is the reality of what we're discussing. It's about September 11th. And you made a key point, George, when you started this broadcast. Look at the Patriot Act. You know, Bush ordered the Border Patrol 2 months ago to stand down in the Tucson sector. They're only doing things that take our liberties and freedoms. It has nothing to do with terrorism. Our government helped found and fund radical Islamic extremists as a, quote, counterbalance against the Soviets going back to the 1950s and then, of course, the 1980s in Afghanistan. When we say that bin Laden is a CIA asset, that I literally have hundreds of newspaper clippings from the 1980s about this young, wonderful hero. So nothing I talked about was a conspiracy theory. There were drills on 9/11 of flying hijacked jets into the very targets that were hit. Dick Cheney was in control from that bunker. Secretary Mineta talked about that in front of the 9/11 Whitewash Commission appointed by Bush. That's not an independent commission, but some major truths did leak out. I've put everything on the line. I have posted everything that I've claimed. It's right there on PrisonPlanet.com. And I think Mr. Lance has done a lot of really important work, but I listened to him. That night you had him on for 3 hours. I stayed up, lost sleep. He talked about how we have Iraqis at Oklahoma City. See, it's an Islamic connection. What he didn't mention was the L.A. Times and Washington Times reporting in the early 90s about George Bush Sr. bringing those 4,000 Iraqis into this country. They've been trained in the 80s at the School of Americas and at other training camps in oppression of the Iraqi people.
How long are you gonna get, is he going to get to speak?
All right, Alex, let's have you connect some of the dots that have occurred after 9/11. What are the things out there that concern you that point to the direction of why this could have been done by people above government?
George, I want to respond to that, but if I can have 60 seconds just to say this. You know, we talk about is bin Laden CIA. We have Buzzy Krongard, number three at the CIA, 2 months ago telling the London Times in a sit-down interview that we don't want to capture bin Laden and then giving his reasons and saying, basically, we're protecting him. Now, just type in. Number three man at CIA says, don't catch bin Laden. We had him at the American hospital for 10 days being treated, and American doctors on record telling the Washington Times and Le Figaro this. So, again, I'm not talking about conspiracies. You just heard Professor Griffin mention what I cited. I'm looking at the documents. I'm looking at Dick Cheney saying we need a tax for this empire. So, again, what am I worried about in the future? I totally agree with Michael Levine. Folks, Dick Cheney has said nukes are going to go off in this country. He said it's not a question of if, but when. And I ask you, how will they re-engineer society when that happens? Why did Bush order the Border Patrol to stand down? Just type that into Google. You'll get every mainstream paper you can imagine. I am talking about America being turned into a total police state, instituting the draft after the next attack, total police state, checkpoints everywhere, all the legislation is being passed. I'm talking about the future of all our families, my family. I am literally got the hair on the back of my neck standing up right now. I put my life on the line to tell the truth on these issues. I spend 10 hours a day on top of everything else I do fighting this and exposing this. These guys are so arrogant, they put their battle plans out, they said what they were going to do. We have the official U.S. government documents saying they want to carry out attacks and explaining why they want to do it. And it's all orchestrated by these shadowy shadow government groups. They now admit the shadow government that gets all of this, the billions and billions, tens of billions of dollars in black op funding. basically, the military-industrial complex, when the Soviet Union fell, has written about 100 white papers saying we need a new enemy. And the perfect enemy is a shadowy Islamic terror network that can never be defeated, kind of the Orwellian goal.
Well, but you have to agree, though, Alex, that Islamic fundamentalist group that's out there doing whatever they do, they are out there.
Oh, absolutely. They are real, but they were not involved in 9/11. Those men on those planes were U.S. government assets taking part in live drills.
Now, who do you mean? Well, let me ask you this, Alex, and we're
I jump in at some point.
What do you think hit the towers? Who do you think was in them?
Well, George, again, it takes 3 hours in my new film, Martial Law, to cover all of this, and we detail it all at PrisonPlanet.com and InfoWars.com. But what I do is the same thing that David Ray Griffin does. The official story from end to end is a complete fraud. I started out on 9/11, and of course 2 months before, looking at what they claimed happened. Then I looked at the evidence, and I took my time, years, to come up in an investigation with specifics that we can prove. And I do believe planes hit the towers. I believe that...
Well, we saw that.
Yes, yes, I believe that it's a disinformation campaign to say that they didn't, and we know the government is putting a lot of money out in disinformation on the web. That's public. Billions of dollars in fake news. So I avoid that. What I focus in on is all of the evidence. And we know that the supposed... Well first off, earlier, Mr. Levine was mentioning people being blocked. I interviewed David Shippers a week after 9/11, the chief impeachment lawyer. He later got up in front with FBI agent Robert Wright and others at the National Press Club and said, here's the national security letters. We've been threatened with arrest. This video clip, by the way, is on the website. And every exhibit is. And he said, all we can tell you is the Bushes vacation with the bin Ladens. He and, of course, the head of Judicial Watch, Larry Klayman, it was Larry Klayman that said that, Robert Wright. All we can say is the Bushes vacation with the bin Ladens. Now, that was the head of Judicial Watch there with Robert Wright crying, holding the letter saying, I'll be arrested if I tell you what I know. A 6-foot-4 man breaking down, hugging the lectern, with Larry Klayman patting him on the back, going, we can't tell you, we'll be arrested. Well, before they got threatened with arrest, I interviewed these individuals. And Bush signed W199I. The BBC Newsnight led with it. Just type W199I in. And Bush, months before 9/11, ordered the FBI and CIA, under threat of national security arrest, not to stop al-Qaeda in this country. So, now, fast forwarding, we know that the supposed hijackers were trained at the Pensacola Naval Air Station, MSNBC, Pensacola News Journal. We know they were trained at that base. Then they went and created a history, classic black op operation. They were the decoys. They went to flight schools, couldn't even get Cessnas off the ground. Then magically did maneuvers that no pilot, I mean, I've interviewed many airline pilots, fighter jet pilots, no one can do this, especially, you know, three times out of four. And what we know is they have their houses, their cars, their credit cards paid for by the CIA and FBI. When they would leave the country to an al-Qaeda summit in Malaysia, I've interviewed the people that were at the different consulates. They were ordered, let them in. This is part of an anti-terrorism training drill. FBI informants were living in their houses with them in San Francisco and in Florida, both ends of the country. We know they, in the weeks before 9/11, were on American and United flights. The famous actor, Mr. Woods, James Woods, he went on Fox News days after 9/11 and said, yeah, I'm on the plane flying from New York to L.A. and we stop in Phoenix, but before we land, these guys are getting up, acting like they're going to hijack the plane, doing weird stuff. I get off the plane and I say, these guys are about to hijack. One of them was admittedly Muhammad Atta. And the FBI holds him and says, national security, you ought to get James Woods on, national security, you'll be arrested if you talk about this. So what we know is there were drills that morning of flying jets into the very buildings that got hit. We know NORAD kept asking, is this a drill? FAA, is this a drill? We know Dick Cheney's in control of the drills from the bunker under the White House. That's admitted. That's come out in testimony. And he said the order still stands, and he yelled at an aide when the aide kept saying, do something, do something. So we know all this is going on. They're on board the aircraft, And then these aircraft fly around for an hour and 25 minutes, knowing they've, quote, been hijacked. Nothing's done, where any other pilot will tell you, you're off course 5 minutes, they'll launch F-16s on you. My dad's a pilot. I mean, this happens hundreds and hundreds of times over the years.
But are you saying, Alex, that these people who you say were under the control of, let's say, the CIA, that they willingly committed suicide?
No. They believed that they were part of a drill. They were on board the aircraft taking part in yet another live-action drill where they were decoys and where they tested airport security.
All right, but who then, on that plane that they were on, who rammed those two planes into the two towers?
Well, for 40 years they've been remote-controlling aircraft, and from my internal Pentagon sources that have always turned out to be accurate, I'm on record over and over again reporting things, then it comes out mainstream news, something was released in the plane, knocking them out, and then the planes were taken over by remote control and flown into the buildings. But we know they were government operatives. We know they were trained at U.S. military bases. We know they were protected and funded. We know they were having the drills. We know all of this. It's like police in a murder investigation. They catch the guy with the bloody butcher knife. They find the dead body buried on his property. The woman's skin is under his fingernails. And then do we know all the specifics of did he stab her before he raped her, or did he rape her, and then did he stab her? All the little, tiny, minute specifics. Then we have a classic intelligence operation with all of these other cover stories and confusion and other dummies mixed into it where it's this swirling mess. And interestingly enough, George, the official U.S. government plan to carry out a 9/11 style attack, Operation Northwood.
Why, that's true. That is a real document. Now, Alex,
as to how that might have occurred. With the towers, one has to wonder how that was the case, but we do have reports that various parts of the towers in the months before 9/11 were shut down, and only certain engineers were allowed to go in.
All right, let's go to you for a moment, Alex. And
let
then
me just mention one more thing.
Go ahead.
The fact that it was so difficult to explain this, FEMA couldn't do it. The 9/11 Commission report, in its 571 pages, did not even mention the fact that Building 7 collapsed.
No, that's true. That's absolutely true. Peter, I'm going to go to you in a second, but you, Alex Jones, because a lot of your casework is based on Building 7 and the way these buildings collapsed. I want to get your take on Building 7 and the other two towers.
Well, thank you, George. Please let me just have a few minutes on this, because this is the smoking gun of 9/11. I've been trying to bring it up, and I want to thank you for bringing it up. And Mr. Griffin's done a lot of great work on it as well, so have many others. Long before Larry Silverstein went on PBS, America Rebuilding, hosted by Mr. Spacey, I was saying that clearly they blew up Building 7 from what happened that day and the news reports. But Larry Silverstein went on, slipped up, and said, we gave the order to pull it. Then they cut to an engineer going, pull it means demolition. They even say that on the show. I mean, this is a godsend that they have these really starts melting at around 3,000 degrees. It was also coated in asbestos, which even makes it harder. Look at Tower 1 and 2, though, before I get into 7 just briefly. We have holes in the towers, people standing in them. The jet fuel has burned out. 50 people, 51 people in one photo, standing in the holes. Their dresses aren't even burning, but giant steel columns are melting, and I have the firefighters, I've talked to firefighters, they've told me, we've been threatened with arrest if we tell you what we know, but they'd already gone public before they were threatened, saying that bombs were going off in Tower 1 and 2. Now,
Let me ask you very quickly, Alex, and then you continue.
Okay.
There's a observatory called Lamont Durty, it's a geological observatory. Was there any seismic evidence at all which would have picked up bombs or sounds like that going off?
Yes, there was evidence at a federal and state facility, but then that can be arguable. What cannot be argued, George, and this is so important for people to understand, is that as Mr. Griffin said, Professor Griffin said, a modern steel building has never collapsed. Going back to Madrid, Spain, 4 months ago, it burns for a day and a half, 100-foot, white-hot flames, shooting up, and not one major pillar collapsed or was even damaged. Now, getting back to Building 7, because this is so important, on PrisonPlanet.com, because that is the documentation, on Infowars.com, we have a huge site, a huge section with hundreds of links, with Dan Rather saying looks like implosion, with Peter Jennings saying it, with Mayor Giuliani going live on TV and saying, yeah, I got told to get out of 7 Tower 1 and 2 were going to come down, so I got out of 7. The CIA, Defense Intelligence, FBI, they were all based. The emergency center was in 7, and they had Tripod 2 going on, so a drill was going on that morning that already had the command base out of the building. That's Associated Press. But back to Building 7, because, again, this cannot be overstated. It is so central to all of this. This thing catches fire later in the afternoon.
Did anything hit 7?
No, not even the debris. By the way, I've been in New York. I've been there. There are two buildings, literally 20 and 42 feet, I measured it, right next to it. They weren't even damaged when it fell. Tower 1, the South Tower, fell up against Bankers Trust. The whole thing burned all day. Nothing collapsed. Building 7 is way down, over a block away. Buildings were all around, but only buildings owned by Silverstein fell down. But here's the key. Larry Silverstein says they pulled the building, the demolition term, for imploding it. And we know that Associated Press photographers were told, get back 10 minutes before it fell, by the firefighters saying, the building is coming down, we are bringing it down. Then I'm at ground zero. Firefighters, police, some on video, some said I can't go on video. We're going, absolutely. They told us all to get out. They told us 7 was going to come down. Even the Israeli company Odigo, that tried to warn people, the instant messengers, based in one of the major towers. This is for Rots, folks. This is Jerusalem Post. Hundreds of their employees were instant messaged 4 hours before, told to get out. MSNBC did an investigation on, quote, urban legends, and concluded that it was true. Hundreds of people were told that they interviewed to get out hours before. Look, those buildings normally had 25,000 people.
Well, you remember when this first happened, they were talking about 30,000 people that I thought, when I was watching this, my daughter woke me up. I thought 25,000 people died in those two towers. And then I realized, as tragic as it is, about 3,000, including, of course, the people who passed away in the plane.
10,000 in it before the evacuation. By the way, the Associated Press reported, George, you're absolutely right. Again, this is just key stuff here. The Associated Press reported that someone from the command center at Building 7 was on the emergency speakers in the building saying, stay at your post, do not leave, everything is fine. And going back to Ahmad Salam, the security force agent from Egypt, it's the same MO every case. The hijackers, this guy, Oklahoma City, they're Iraqis, they're Egyptians, they're Saudi Arabians, who we all can document were on the payroll of the U.S. government. Ahmad Salam was paid to cook the bomb, train the drivers, and he goes to them and says, they're about to bomb, let's do the sting. They pull him off. He thought it was a setup, which it was. He goes and tapes, what is it, 16 hours of conversation, so he would be protected. Then they pay him off to shut up. It isn't like they're a bunch of idiots at the FBI. The blind sheik was above a pizza parlor with about 25 members of his cult. They went and found some radical Islamicist to basically be the cover for the FBI, cooking the bomb, giving the detonators. The two drivers were both registered as mentally retarded on welfare, and they had to train them, and they kept telling them how to park it up against the main column, but luckily they were retarded and didn't, so it didn't bring down one tower and knock the other down. And it's the same story, George, every time. It isn't the FBI is a bunch of idiots. Look, FBI Deputy Director O'Neill quit 2 months before 9/11.
Yeah, he died in the tower.
And he told the London Independent 1 month before he died, he said they're going to allow an attack on the towers. This is on the site, London Independent, to have a pretext to invade Afghanistan. Now, that guy's on record from the grave. He quit to go defend the towers. He tells the newspaper that they're going to attack it. They're going to let them attack it. It's the same story. And you just played that tape earlier. How can that be spun magically into the FBI are idiots when they're on the tape going, well, they're going to let them bomb it and we cook the bomb?
I've recently written a little summary of my second book, The 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions, and called it a 571-page lie. I counted 115 lies of omission and distortion in it that I had mentioned. Let me give one of them that goes back to the question of the towers. One of the features of a controlled demolition is a total collapse. These towers, 110 stories, had 47 massive steel columns that constituted the core of each building. And how in the world did they collapse down into a pile of rubble no more than three stories high? How did the 9/11 Commission explain that these columns weren't still there? They simply told an enormous lie and said that the core of each tower consisted of a hollow steel shaft. Simply denied the most distinctive feature of these buildings, the 47 massive steel columns.
All right, and Alex, I'll let you wrap up for a couple minutes.
Well, I totally agree with David Roy Griffin. I've read the entire report. I've written a detailed analysis of it on PrisonPlanet.com. They don't mention, in one word, Building 7, way down the street, 47 stories, perfectly imploding. It's unbelievable. People, 9/11 is the foundation of this huge, mammoth police state. You know they lie to you. You know they lie to you every day. They have the motive to invade the world, to use us as their Hessian slaves, as their mercs, as their freebooters, as their mercenaries. You can look at it all around you. You know America's dying. So many people are ready to wake up. So I've done 2,400-plus radio interviews in the last 3 years and three quarters, and I'll do a show for 4 hours with 100 phone calls, and nobody disagrees with me. The first hour, George took calls. Everybody knew something was wrong. The whole panel knows something's wrong. Bottom line, your guts know something's wrong. It's over for us unless we expose who is behind September 11th. And I'll tell you, George, I would miss it for the world to be here in the next hour.
All right. Peter, the Downing Street memo, is that going to create a problem for the Bush administration, which basically, if it's true, says that the evidence was long planned before the invasion of Iraq to go in there and take out Saddam Hussein?
And that they looked for legal reasons to justify it. They knew it was illegal, and that it's even worse, so that they actually had to come up with legal reasons to do it. Is it going to be a problem? I don't think with this media dominated by Fox News. Fox has brought the media so far to the right in this country that CNN has gone to the right. If you used to be a liberal, you're now a Trotskyite. If you're a moderate, you're a liberal. You know, it's like there's been very little reporting on the Downing Street memo. It's incredible. So the answer is it going to hurt Bush? It's unlikely unless our media takes back the responsibility of fairly and balanced coverage of the news, which they have abdicated.
Do you agree with that, Alex?
I am suspect of the Downing Street. Well, now it's 9 memos. One of them's Downing. We got a bunch of Condoleezza Rice's memos, a bunch of others where they go, yeah, he doesn't have any weapons, but this is the pretext. What I like to focus on is something that's been totally ignored, is PNAC. And there's about 15 different documents there, but that September 20th, 2000, written by Dick Cheney and Jeb Bush, they say, and I'm paraphrasing, but it's almost word for word, Saddam Hussein is not a threat, but he could be used as a pretext to invade and use Iraq as a military launch base against Iran and Syria. So, you know, we don't just have Clark, we don't just have O'Neill, the Treasury Secretary, saying all of this. We have all the evidence. We have their own battle plans, their own strategic operations, and we know they manufactured the Niger uranium yellow cake document. That's now admitted. We know that. I mean, Rumsfeld gets on Face the Nation and says, "I never said there were weapons of mass destruction." Quote, "It's an urban legend." And then they start playing clips of him saying it. He said it 120 something times on TV. So I've got like 15 or 20 of them posted on my website. So the
is that before or after they showed the picture of him shaking Saddam Hussein's hand back in the 1980s?
Well, exactly. Saddam was our boy, gave him the weapons. He was the love child attacking Iran for us. So it's the same story over and over and over again. Oh, and by the way, George, getting back to 9/11 just briefly before we go to these calls. When I made martial law, 9/11 Rise, the police state, this new film, we created, first time I know of it, a bibliography, a syllabus for the film at martiallaw911.info. There's a big link on my main website that every article, every document, every source that we source in the film by the time code on the DVD is posted at martiallaw911.info. So when people say conspiracy theory, it's not a conspiracy. This stuff is hidden in plain view. That is, it's not a conspiracy theory on my part. It is a criminal conspiracy by a very elite element internationally in control of our government and private corporations. Just type, you know, I heard conspiracy theory earlier about shadow government. If you just type in government admits shadow government or Daschle complains about shadow government, you'll get the Washington Post, where they have now, 3 years ago, announced, yes, a shadow government is in control of the country. The Pentagon Office of Strategic Influence is lying to you for your own good. The Bush administration is buying hundreds of millions of dollars in fake newscasts. Look, everybody knows something's wrong, so it's time to get past the denial and admit that, and I'm not even blaming Bush, he is a puppet, his daddy is a puppet, for these international interests that are playing us like a marionette.
Let's go to the phones. East of the Rockies, your turn. Who's your question for?
Actually, it's for the entire panel.
Okay. And where are you calling from, sir?
This is Jason from Iowa City.
Okay.
I just want to get the panel's opinion on the ultimate motivation behind all this. If there is a shadow government, or if the government indeed takes away all of our rights and takes control, what is the ultimate motivation behind all this? And I have a feeling Alex was going to say like the beginning of Armageddon, but
we'll go to each three. Okay,
I'll just hang up and listen.
All right, Mike Levine, you first.
Let me quote Milt Bearden, who was the CIA man in charge of supplying the Mujahideen back during the now infamous war against Russia in Afghanistan. And Milt Bid was asked in a film called Blowback, what his philosophy was in arming the Mujahideen. And the question was posed in this way, that they're sworn enemies of America. Didn't you think that this might come back to haunt us? And we're talking about $1 billion, a good portion of which went to Bin Laden, which we're paying for now. Milt Bearden's answer was this. He said, my philosophy, and this is a direct quote, and my philosophy prevailed, was put the guns in the hands of the shooter and let God sort it out. End quote. God is now sorting it out, my friend. That was their motivation, clear and simple, stupid political motivation. It was the same motivation. They had political motivation back when I was undercover in Southeast Asia during the Vietnam War, and they protected the heroin source that was smuggling heroin into the U.S. in the dead bodies of our GIs. And it's the same philosophy that is prevailing right at this moment, why the Drug Enforcement Administration is kept out of Homeland Security, because there's a simple equation. They've made a Central Intelligence, the State Department, understand that a country like Afghanistan, for instance, needs heroin to survive economically.
Mm-hmm.
So how can you have the Drug Enforcement Administration in the war on terror when their main mission is to stop drug trafficking, particularly now that it's clear that Bin Laden is being supported by heroin trafficking into the veins and brains of American children? So it's, again, a stupid political choice, and it's prevailing right to this moment.
What's the motivation, Peter Luntz?
Well, I do think that Eisenhower was right when he warned about the military-industrial complex, and I do believe that the munitions, the arms makers, the defense manufacturers, one of which GE now owns a network and a studio, Universal NBC Studios, I do believe that they have a profit in war and conflict, and I do believe, and I agree with Alex, that after the fall of the Soviet Union, a new enemy was needed, and this enemy, which we helped to arm and train and create, as Mike said, in Afghanistan, was perfect for the job. But that does not mean that the enemy is not lethal and competent.
Yeah.
And it also doesn't mean, and the other thing is, when you talk about the shadow government, I mean, on my website, I deal in facts only, okay? And I, on my website, I have names. I name the federal people who I believe are culpable. Who are the, I like to ask Alex, who the shadow government members are. You know, give me the names of the shadow government members so we can go after them, so we can achieve something tonight other than just...
Well, let me tell you, in his defense, I have asked Alex not to give specific names because I don't have the kind of evidence and I didn't want it on the show. So that you can blame me for that, Peter.
All right, but what I'm saying is, if you don't have the evidence, he doesn't have the evidence either.
Well,
if he had the evidence, he'd put it on his website, and he'd be subject to the libel laws that I'm subject to. See, truth is an absolute defense of the law. If you defame somebody, if you injure their reputation, truth is an absolute defense. And like the Jamie Gorelicks of the world don't want to get on the other side of a libel case with me because they'd be under oath and they'd have to open up. When you talk about the shadow government, it serves... No, and one last, I just want to mention one thing. He talked about Ahmad Salamini. He got his facts wrong. He said he was cooking up the brew and everything. That was the second case. That was when he was in the garage doing the second bombing. Ahmad Salam was a cab driver that Nancy Floyd found working in a hotel in Manhattan. He'd been in the Egyptian army. He risked his life. He infiltrated the blind sheikh's cell. And he was the best, as Mike Levine said, probably the most valuable asset we had in the war on terror. And because of bungling in the FBI, not because of some shadow government, some evil conspiracy, he was blown out. And that's why 9/11, and that's why the original World Trade Center bombing happened. The Luxor massacre happened in 1997. They cut 58 people, their bodies open, men, women, and children.
They
shared leaflets, free the blind sheikh. I'm sick and tired of hearing about how these ragtag group of Islamics are innocent and they're all being manipulated by the puppet masters. It's sickening to me because I've been in the building. I went into Memorial Park. I looked at those 8 refrigerated trucks with the 14,000 body parts from 9/11. I was a friend of Ronnie Buka, who died on the 78th floor of the South Tower with a hose in his hand that day. And I'm sick and tired of listening to these people talk about shadow government when nothing gets done. I think it's the height of disinformation.
Can I respond to this, please?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Sir, just hold your horses for just a second, Mr. Lance. Okay. Do you hear on the air want to bet me $50,000 that the Washington Post, the Associated Press, and Reuters, UPI, and every other major publication you can imagine, literally hundreds, reported 2.5 years ago the public admission by the... I was on national TV debating this with a member of the Bush cabinet. They admit that the shadow government... we're talking about the National Security Agency. We're talking about the National Security Act of 1947. We're talking about the hundreds of billions of dollars in secret black op budget programs. We're talking about, I mean, you're denying that there's a shadow government?
Well, what are you...
hold on. You have 3 minutes. Let me just continue.
You're not making... You want to...
No, I'm going to continue. Hold on just a second.
You're not making you...
Hold on a minute. Hold on.
If you Google shadow government...
Sir, you're taking over.
The word shadow government...
Hold on. Hold on. Peter. Hold on. Let him finish.
Sir, I'm looking at the New York Times and the Chicago Tribune, where the FBI cooked the bomb and trained the drivers. I put them in my films.
Stop right there.
All right, Peter, ask one question.
Exactly what he's talking about. He's talking about October 28th, 1994, the New York Times, they got a hold of the bootleg tapes, and for years people have said that's definitive proof that the FBI planned the bomb. It's absurd. He's wrong. He doesn't even know what he's talking about, and that's what really bothers me.
Sir, earlier you said that they just put bombs in Building 7 for national security. What type of cockamamie? You talk about slander and libel. I can back up everything I'm saying. I don't appreciate you throwing terms around like that. Larry Silverstein said they pulled the...
Hey, guys, you answer questions from the listeners, or I'll do it by myself.
Yeah, let's do it. Go ahead. He's the one attacking me, George.
I'm attacking you because you what you have done with this shadow government and employment is incompetent.
Fine, I won't defend myself. Just go ahead and knock yourself out.
You're taking the eye of the American people off the proper ball. You're like the ultimate information specialist.
Okay, let's go. Enough. Alex, enough. Let's take calls. Wildcard Line, welcome to the show. Hi there.
Hi, this is Ross from Ohio.
Hi, Ross. Go ahead.
How you doing? Number one, just three real quick comments and two hot questions that might really help us all out, and then I'll get off. Number one, I love your show, and I really honor you for what you're doing, man.
Well, they're all trying.
Right, and I mean, you know, you're the only talk show host that, you know, you've got the guts to come up. And first comment is, you know, you could maybe help propel this. You know, we need some kind of a strategy globally, not just this country. This is happening, this global governmentalism, this trend we all feel we're heading toward. You know, how about like a weekly, you know, non-global participation, like a civil protest, not
well,
to
I'll say this. George does have courage, and nobody else is doing what he's doing.
Right, and okay, number two, I'm going to make this as quick as I can, okay?
Right.
Okay, I was awoken 911 by a phone call from my sister. I had just a third shift. And the phone kept ringing, and she's like, you know, flip the news on, flip the news on, you don't know what's happening, you know. Okay, well, here, to make a long story short, okay.
Well, please do it, because I got a lot of calls.
Okay. There was a clip of a fireman blocking traffic there. And as far as memory serves, that was pulled, like, that was only played the day after, September 12th, okay? And I met with someone else that, you know, just something at that point told me there's really something wrong here, okay?
Well, hold on. You've lost me. What's the significance of him blocking traffic?
Okay, well, what it was is there was a photographer there that was just filming this scene of just firefighters.
There were lots of
firefighters supposedly doing a training exercise. But the way he panned his camera, and you guys could dig this up.
These were the two French brothers.
Right in time for the first impact, and the artificial tone of his voice alerted me. Okay, and the question is, the first World Trade Center bombing, 93, Whether he was patsy or not, even if they allowed that first one to happen, wouldn't that evacuation, inspection, et cetera, have given them plenty of time to plan any charges that they needed to plant?
Well, I think as Peter demonstrated when he was with me on April 18th, they have been wanting to take down the World Trade Center for a long, long time, and they just never gave up. Now, did other people get involved in stuff? That's part of our discussion. But they just kept going and going and going. And Peter, I don't know why they didn't see the signs in 93.
Well, I think they did see the signs. Look, you know something? Nidal Ayad was the Rutgers grad who was trained in 89 by this Ali Muhammad, and he was the guy that got the chemicals for Yousef. He typed the threat letter from Yousef's 5th Battalion. When Ramzi Yousef was at JFK that night about to flee, and he saw Channel 2, and he saw the fact that they were calling Serbian terrorists, he was jealous. And he literally called the guy and said, I want you to add this to the letter and then send it out again. And he said, we know what we did wrong. We're coming back, and those towers will not stand. Or words to that effect.
You know, who has a motive in 9/11? Do the Arabs get something? They get attacked and invaded. Who gets oil and weapon sales, and who gets to destroy
them? But, Alex, you're falling into the theory that I would agree with Peter, is that after this happened, they decided, hey, you know what? We can benefit from
that. Well, either way, they're bad. But you asked a question earlier I never got to answer, and the other two guests did. You said, what's the goal? Well, a caller did. Why do they want this? Everybody wants to rule the world is the rock and roll song. Elites throughout history need a crisis to build an empire and domestically set up a police state. Why did Hitler firebomb his own Reichstag building? It's the same story. You know, Peter Lance earlier was saying, oh, conspiracy, Gulf of Tonkin. I'm 5 miles from the LBJ Presidential Library. Everybody always knew the Gulf of Tonkin didn't happen to start the Vietnam War.
Of course it didn't happen.
But they released the tape.
Of course it didn't, but
they released the LBJ tape.
That's ridiculous.
How is that a conspiracy? LBJ's on tape saying it.
Now, I know. It, of course it was manufactured. It was a pretext.
Well, how is that a conspiracy then?
Alex, don't yell. You're going to break my headphones.
Listen,
I'm sorry.
Lumping, what I'm saying is, Alex, what you do, the way you operate, and I'm looking at your memo. What did you say earlier about the 199 memo? Didn't you say President Bush signed it? What was your comment about
Clinton first signed it in 96 and Bush reissued it months before 9/11, ordering the FBI not to go after the funders of Al-Qaeda and the Bin Laden family?
Well, no, in 1996, okay?
I just said it. Bill Clinton signed it, and Bush continued it.
Yeah, Bush continued
it. I told you what it says.
Alex, please, take it a step at a time.
Stop implying I'm not telling the truth.
I'm not implying anything. You said Bush signed you. The way you announced it earlier in the show, you made it sound like this huge pronunciamento that linked President Bush directly with
the FBI agents who got on the National Press Club.
But listen, just because the Bush, House of Bush, House of Saud, a brilliant book, which proves, and there's no doubt, that the Bushes are cronies of the Saudis, that they benefited in the oil industry with the Saudis, etc.
Bush's first company was Arbusto with the...
I know all of that. I agree with all of that.
Wait, hold on. Everybody agrees on that one. But hold on. We've got to take this break. Let's go back to the phones. We'll pick it up by going to our West of the Rockies line. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Where are you calling from?
We are already.
Vancouver, British Columbia, West Coast,
welcome
Canada.
Welcome to the show, sir.
To a large degree. You're doing an awesome job. Alex, I'm proud of you. You're doing a heck of a job, too. I just wanted to say, of course, that the first casualty of war is the truth. And the birth of information is
the
second event. And I believe that it's forensically proven that basically there's so much missing concrete, steel, and glass from the rubble because they measured it and weighed it, that an EMP charge from C4 is the only thing that can break a building up like that.
It was aerosolized. It was turned into tiny particles. And just to go back 10 minutes, I typed in, this is key, folks, into Google. May have heard of it.
Yeah.
Here it is. Dashiell government admits shadow government. And I got Washington Post, as I said, Austin Chronicle, legitimategovernment.com, and I've been told there's no shadow government, and here it is. The Bush administration has established a shadow government. This is the Washington Post, by the way, consisting of 75 to 150 officials.
Oh, you're talking about
okay. Hang on.
That's ridiculous. That's not
Peter,
the same thing.
Peter,
that's
hang on
the government
sec.
That was supposed to back up if they had a...
That's
the shadow government that caused 9/11. Give me a break.
No, you just said there wasn't a shadow government, buddy.
George... George, with all, I've been doing this night and day since 9/11.
Iran-Contra.
Hold on.
When you have a guy like this on talking about a shadow government.
See, I'm not the one going mad though.
Alex, quiet.
You guys are repeating yourself. Can I just say something?
No.
You
know,
Peter, you remember the Kennedy assassination, Iran-Contra?
Do I remember it?
I covered it for Nightline. I did a 20-minute piece on the 20th anniversary of it. Okay? I've covered 3,000 investigative stories in my career. Okay? I've never been sued, and no one's ever won a libel case against me. And
you see that ABC News story about Air Force, Peter?
I tell you what I'm going to do, guys. All three of you, I think, are beginning to suffer from fatigue. You've been on with me all night. I'm going to let you all go. Thank you for being part of this panel. I'm going to take the open line calls because you're shouting at each other. Peter, thank you. I appreciate you being on the program. You do a great job for us.
Okay, George. Can I have 1 minute to conclude, please?
Sure.
With all due respect, when you actually come out and say the Bush administration staged 9/11 as part of a shadow government, and you talk about what Tom Daschle was referring to, where the whole sort of backup government, there was a whole place they were supposed to go if the government was attacked. That's completely separate from the idea that they're these puppet masters pulling the strings.
I agree with that. I rest my case on Alex Jones.
George,
can I close?
Okay. Well, hold on. I want
to
take care of Peter
with this
first.
Kind of rhetoric.
All right, Peter, thank you. Appreciate you being on the program. Mike Levine, I'll let you go next.
Thanks. Thank you so much, George.
Appreciate you being on the show. And go ahead, Alex. Wrap it up.
Well, no. I mean, George, that's just one piece of 1,000 pieces. We have Tommy Franks leaving. We have Tommy Franks leaving CENTCOM saying if there's one more attack, we're going to have martial law and a military dictatorship. So, you know, I wasn't trying to argue with Peter, and I appreciate you having me on. I think this was really important radio, and I've really enjoyed it. And God bless you for having the courage to have me and others on to talk about this.
There'll be more of that. That's Alex Jones. All of you did a great job for us. I'll finish up by just taking the rest of the open line phone calls. First time caller line, welcome to the show. You've got me. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
I consider myself, an individual unaffiliated. Even so, and I know that Alex Jones is a conservative, but I have to say that he's the only one that's saying anything coherent here about 9/11. And I would point out that it's not just Fox News that is the villain in this piece. I was thinking of this Operation Northwoods not being discussed when its expert exposer, James Bamford, the top NSA expert, was on the C-SPAN. He was on MSNBC and NPR. At the time of his book that was detailing Operation Northwoods, which was a plan by the Joint Chiefs of Staff to murder Americans, to terror bomb American cities, and blame it on Cuba to justify a full-scale invasion. In other words, an earlier approximation of 9/11, they did not mention during any of those interviews that explosive part of his book, the whole chapter, the basis of his book. All they wanted to know about was how can we make the CIA and the NSA stronger and tougher and more efficient. And then I'm thinking of other instances. For instance, this Popular Mechanics hit piece against people like Alex Jones and David Ray Griffin. If you look behind the scenes, for instance, 911truth.org had an article about how there was a total coup at Popular Mechanics, eliminating all of their former editors, and that one of the people that was appointed as head, the head of the Hearst Corporation, her husband was a former special assistant to the Central Intelligence Agency. He worked for a CIA-connected law firm with connections to William Webster, the former director of the Central Intelligence Agency. You have also, I think, a lot of disinformation coming out of some of the fake left, which explains, I think, the reasons they will not talk about the obvious complicity. If you look at a lot of the things that these researchers...
Well, also in Northwoods, didn't they want to shoot down John Glenn as he was going up into space?
Well, to blame it on Cuba, to blow up a ship in Cuban Harbor and blame it on Cuba, to shoot down people in the street, to send up an airplane with highly publicized people who were actually CIA agents, and then would land at a strip, a secret strip, and then send up a drone plane and shoot it down, much like a 9/11, and then have a fake broadcast saying that they were being shot down by the Cubans, and use it as a pretext to galvanize public opinion, just as they said, and as Jones pointed out in the Project for New American Century, they needed a second Pearl Harbor attack to justify what they said in that document was a plan for world domination, starting with an attack on Iraq and then eliminating any obstacle to these neocons' plans for world domination.
See, what I have believed is that this group of black ops people who have created this, I think they worked with and hired al-Qaeda to do the dirty work, to get it done, in order then to grow and utilize their own agenda.
Well, absolutely. For world domination and the police state measures that they had planned long before 9/11. And the most sophisticated billion-dollar surveillance system and protection system in NORAD is going to be outwitted by these Jim Cracker guys in a cave, and a guy on a kidney dialysis machine in a cave. It's ridiculous. And I think we've gotten to I was absolutely disgusted with this Peter Lance accusing and constantly heckling Jones and accusing him of disinformation. This is a classic CIA hangout to claim that this is just a bunch of bumbling idiots. They can tolerate that. That's a whitewash and would completely be acceptable to these guys that are plunging us into this perpetual warfare. And, you know, I think being on the left, I'm a little disgusted with some on the fake left, because I was reading this article that many of them are funded by the Ford and Rockefeller Foundations on a short leash. If they talk about anything such as that is going to really open the eyes of the American public as to the luringness of this government to kill Americans, they lose their funding from the Rockefeller and Ford Foundation, like Democracy Now! And the rest of these fake left outfits.
All right. Thanks for your comments, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being part of the program. Next up, let's go east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Anthony calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Great show. I'm sorry that I missed the opportunity to talk to Alex and Peter, because I've got a comment that leads to a question, which I think...
Well, they'll be on again, but probably separately.
Well, yeah, no, I completely understand. And thank you, by the way, for taking the call and for doing this program. Anyway, my brief comment, which does lead to a question, I think also points to partly the dynamic that was going on between Alex and Peter, just in terms of finding a common language, finding a way to speak about these things. If we say that, let's say it's a given, all governments are run by liars, there seems to be this parallel universe underneath what's going on the surface of global geopolitics. But if global geopolitics really is about gangsterism and really is nuclear gangsterism, which is what it appears to be, my question really speaks to the dynamic of communication. We're through the looking glass. We're in this Alice in Wonderland place where the American people in particular are so politically naive and so politically unsophisticated. We have been allowed to be so because we are so isolated from the rest of the world and because we have this massive technological monster. When you've got the media, if you look at Ben Bagdikian's book, The Media Monopoly, and you look at the fact that even the mechanisms through which we can communicate thoughts or ideas are controlled almost completely by this weird corporate global Alice in Wonderland parallel universe of whatever you want to call it, I guess what I'm getting at is how do we find a language, a common language, a way to find a new paradigm through which to speak to the masses of people around the world to get them to open their eyes. There seems to be no hope for the future of humankind because those that have power are just, you know, continuing to accrue more, and they're sitting on top of the crap.
Actually, I differ with that. I think there is hope for mankind in the future.
So how do we get to that point, George, where we can even talk about the fact
we're
that
doing, we're doing
really
it now.
To shake themselves?
We're doing it now because, you know what, they haven't been able to stop us. And as long as we continue to talk about it, we're going to, you know what, Congress started making some changes in the Patriot Act. Did you really think that would happen? As much as I wish we didn't have that act, at least some people there are beginning to question some of the things that are in there. And I didn't think that would ever happen.
But it appears to me that what we've got is we've got this genie out of the bottle scenario where we are 6 billion plus of us. We can't possibly all be gathered under one tent, as it were, any longer in order to communicate as a global village, which seems like what, you know, pardon the cliche or whatever, but it seems as though there is no way now to back out of this massive entanglement of, let's say, human conspiracies from the dawn of humankind.
Well, I'll give it to you that we are in one heck of a web right now, and it's going to take a lot of work to get out of it. There's no doubt about that. Let's go on to some other callers. Thanks. Wildcard Line, welcome to the show. Hi there.
Hi, me?
Yes, you.
Hi, my name's Artemis.
Artemis. Hi there,
yes,
Artemis.
Hi. Yes. I just have a quick comment. I'm calling from Arcadia, California.
Sure, go ahead.
And I just want to comment, that why are we so afraid of conspiracy? I mean, if it's not, if you say there's a conspiracy today, you're paranoid, but then tomorrow if it's true, then you're perceptive. So, I mean, what is the worst that could happen? That we're overprepared or?
No,
I mean,
there are just some people who don't believe in conspiracy. There are others. I think the remarkable thing about the panel tonight, even though there was some major disagreement, they all agree that whatever is happening is unnatural. Peter has his views on why it's that way. Alex has his. Mike Levine did. David Ray Griffin did. But they all agree that whatever is going on is not what we've been told. And to me, that's the dramatic part of the story.
But, I mean, I think that time we do get paranoid. I mean, if even the mildest version of that, of any one of their four stories or versions are true, then I mean it's a long time gone that we should be paranoid and do something.
I have used this analogy before. Have you heard the story about how you cook a frog?
you put
him in a pot and you simmer him, right? And then he's cooked and he doesn't even know it. But if you put him in this pot and it's already boiling, he's going to jump right out. That's what they're doing to us. They're simmering us.
Exactly.
A little bit at a time.
Exactly. So, I mean, I don't know. But thank you very much.
All right. But let's be smarter than the frogs. We know that's happening. Let's pick it up by going to our West of the Rockies line. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hi. Good evening, George. Good morning. Or good morning.
It is an early one now for us, isn't it?
Yes. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And it occurs to me that while I enjoy Alex Jones and all the rest of the members of the panel, it does seem to me that if the government were as vehemently intent upon squashing the truth and censoring the truth, that one of the first measures it would have taken would be to pull down websites such as Alex Jones's. And that paradox doesn't seem to occur to him.
Well, but don't you think that would create even more suspicion? If all of a sudden Alex's website was taken down and some other people who were very vocal about all this, then they'd really have something they'd have to explain about.
And that's why a conspiratorialist can never be refuted.
True. Absolutely true.
Because all of the arguments that refute his position only feed into it, only feed into his fear and negativism.
But with every conspiracy, don't you think that there could be a little fire there?
Certainly. Not everyone, but in many of them, certainly.
Okay, appreciate you being on the program. Next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
How you doing tonight?
I am doing wonderful.
Well,
considering that I got hit, my car got smashed, and I had to corral everybody, I'm doing okay.
I heard you say that. I'm calling from Miami, Florida, and you have been preempted here by local news and all that other stuff. So on W something something something, you are, it's local news that's going on right now.
Well, some stations carry just the 4 hours. Most of them do not carry the fifth hour because they're not aware that we do this once in a while. But I can live with that.
Okay. Well, kudos tonight, George.
All right, thanks. Appreciate you. A question?
Yeah, your question is to you, actually.
All right.
What is the one most evidence? And if it's not evidence, then it's the train of logic. What is the one thing that stood out tonight that would lead you to do a sequel roundtable to everything that we've heard tonight?
I think the one thing, again, that stuck out so much tonight was the fact that they did agree to disagree. And that tells me a lot about what's going on here. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi, this is Mike calling you from Oklahoma.
Hello,
yes,
Mike.
Yes, I am a first-time caller and a long-time listener.
Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Just a quick comment. Listening to the show, and I listened to a caller here just a few moments ago that I must concur with, and that is the fact that Jones seems to have a grip on the situation to a good extent, but he gets a little excited, and that kind of takes away from the weight of what he's saying.
He is a bulldog.
Yes, he is. The thing that concerns me is something that you stated earlier about the American people losing control of the country. And I gave that some thought, and when I look back in history, I look at the Jekyll Island meeting that took place in America, and I think that that is where we as Americans began to lose control of our country.